everybody, and welcome to the Indie Film Cafe. I'm your host, Jonathan Moody, and I'm here with...
Paul A. Presents, and known as the Boo Cow Moo.
And we're also with...
Jess Jen.
All right, and it's a magical day.
It's a magical day.
Sure.
And we are going to be talking about Faithful Findings.
By Neil Breen. Woohoo!
This was one of Paul's picks, and we're going to...
Thanks, Paul.
No, nice when saving it for you guys.
Oh, my goodness. And, but before we get into that, let's hear some mood music.
It's a magical day.
All right, we're back, everybody. We are back here, and we are ready to talk. So, Paul, since this is your film, tell us.
It's not my film.
Oh, you wish it was.
Neil Breen's film that he made in 2013. He produced, wrote it, directed, edited, and starred in it. He also did production design, set decoration, makeup, sound. He was casting director, location scout. Did costume and wardrobe and craft services. He did pretty much everything for this film. And in fact, that's pretty typical for a Neil Breen film. He has a whole bunch of nicknames. The one I think I like best for him is Neil the Lean Mean Hacking Machine.
Because, did he give himself this nickname?
Yes.
Oh.
Because hacking is a theme that pops up in several of his films. So, he was an architect and briefly was a real estate agent in the Las Vegas area, which is why most of his movies are sort of set there or very nearby. In fact, during the film, at least one of the scenes was set in Red Rock Canyon. I could definitely tell that.
Very beautiful. Oh yeah, yeah. Scenery.
Mm. He's very, very, very indie. If you ever read any of his interviews, he talks about how he has no interest in becoming part of the quote-unquote Hollywood insiders or the Hollywood elite.
That's a good goal for him, I'll say.
Which, you know, given the fact that they probably want nothing to do with him, you know, I mean, that's the thing. And then, so he's been self-financing all of his films since then.
How many films does he have out?
Well... He has self-financed four films thus far, primarily from his salary as an architect. And there is a fifth one that is coming out right about now called Twisted Pair. It's being financed via Kickstarter, and it is scheduled for release this year, 2018. And as a matter of fact, there are screenings in October of this year.
So hold on. Wait. Let's go back to that. So... People actually put in money, donated money for this next movie he's done after seeing movies like this?
People love Neil Breen movies. They really do. For the same reason I love it.
Did you?
No.
Oh.
No, I did not yet. Not yet, anyway.
Oh, next Kickstarter.
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
we're
Neil Breen.
We're still going to blame you for this next one.
Neil Breen, understand that Paul will actually donate
you
to
go.
Your next one. So you've got one donation.
Absolutely. Same thing with Continuity Monkey.
Yes.
Because you gave him a good job in this film. He was quite busy and quite happy.
We'll get to that later.
So, again, if you read any of Neil's interviews, he talks about that there are three themes that he likes to sort of discuss or touch on in his films. Paranormal or mystical activity, social commentary, and then lost romances. These are things that are definitely in this particular film, but the other thing, if you watch a number of these Neil Breen movies, you notice that he also likes to be the central figure, like everything is about him and his character. His characters tend to be these sort of messianic figures who are fighting the government, fighting corruption, or fighting the forces of whatever. And he does an awful lot of hacking and accessing of secrets, because that's what you do when you're a powerful person and you want to show everybody that you're a powerful person, which he likes to do in his films. Because I presume he can't do that in real life.
Maybe he can.
So, yeah.
Who knows?
I'm not sure. But at least in this particular film, he got to do all kinds of stuff. And, yeah, he his character, Dylan. Ooh. I guess we can talk about the characters.
Sure, let's jump right in.
Let's jump right in. His character is named Dylan, and he starts off meeting this girl, and I guess they're buddies, and they go off and have a magical day in the woods.
They're children.
They're children.
When they're children, yeah.
I guess they're supposed to be 8 years old, and they're walking through the what kind of woods there are out there in Las Vegas, and they discover a magic mushroom, which really is magical, and they remark
not
about
that how, kind of magic mushroom.
No.
An actual magic mushroom.
Because as you stare at it, and in fact, as they stand and point at it, it slowly turns into a little plastic box or a little jewelry box full of like
very, very, very slowly.
Yeah, no. The kid like holds his hand out, showing the thing to the camera.
Almost in a Vanna White-ish.
Yeah. Here it is. I'm presenting it.
For like, I don't know, it felt like 5 minutes, but it was probably like only 30 seconds. But it was still 30 seconds is a long-ass time. And he holds it down, and then eventually it like disintegrates. It's like, wait, does this kid know?
And remember, there's this like little puff of fairy magical dust that happens right before he finds it.
Fairy card.
And that pops up several times in the film.
Yeah, we see that, but like, I didn't understand it.
There's no explanation for any of the magical.
No, he's just a magical person. That's what it is.
Because it's a magical day. Right. That's what the kid says. Right. That's what she writes down. She writes down, it's a magical day.
Well, again, this is the same sort of thing that happens in most characters in his films. He has these extra powers that nobody else can because he's Neil Breen. And you're not. So you can't do stuff.
Yeah, but how did he get those magical powers? Was that ever...
Does that matter? Does it matter?
Yes, it matters.
Just accept the fact that he's awesome, more awesome than we are.
It only matters for one reason. Because the movie needs to know this information. In a real, normal movie, you gotta know these kind of things.
Well, in a normal Neil Breen movie doesn't care.
Okay, well,
we're talking about characters.
Right. So anyway, he's there with Leah. And, It is Leah. Okay. So they're there. He finds this little black cube and he finds a bunch of little plastic trinkets. And then she was like, you can't leave the box empty cause it'll be bad luck. I'm not sure where that rule came from, but so she puts a few of the little things back in, they cover it up with some crap and then it magically slowly turns back into a mushroom. They walk off, and then the very, very next 5 seconds, she's getting into her car with her parents, and the husband is like, oh, it's not like the plane's going to leave without us. It's like, yes, it will. Have you ever been late to a flight? They fly without your ass.
They don't go, hey, we got to wait for that family to come.
No.
Yeah.
I liked how they threw the suitcases. So they have like an SUV type of vehicle.
Like a Lexus.
Yeah. They throw the suitcases, two suitcases in the back seat and a duffel bag. And then the little girl gets in the back seat. Then what about the trunk? That's what I wondered. I'm like, okay, is she going to sit on the luggage? She's not going to be in room for it. Of course, she's hanging out the window.
It's still a magical day, right?
Mm-hmm. She is hanging out the window like that whole time. Like,
yeah.
And for a second, let's touch upon the, and I know we're talking characters, but let's talk about the
like,
fact.
We morphed into story.
The fact
here.
That the family has.
We should have talked about story.
This Lexus, okay? Mm-hmm. I mean, if we're looking at 8-year-old Neil Breen's character, I mean, Neil Breen's like 50 in this film. Mm-hmm. So at least 40 years have passed, and yet they're in a Lexus when he's a kid.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Well, yeah, there's that. And also, if they're like about the same age, later on when he's 50, she would be 50, and she was obviously in her 30s.
Right, right.
Yeah, at least.
She was like, about 32?
Yeah, something like that.
Maybe time moved a little slower for her.
It's a Neil Breen movie.
It's a Neil Breen movie.
I guess that's what you gotta
say. That's right, it's brainless.
That's a brainless.
So, that's Leah. And then there is Emily. Emily is Dylan's wife, who we think is Russian or Eastern European.
Yeah, she definitely has that type of an accent.
Some kind of accent. Yeah.
What was her name? Her real name? Clara.
Clara. I was going to get to the actors in a few.
Yeah.
Then there are the two fighting friends, Jim and Amy.
Who just appear. No explanation.
And their kid, Allie.
Mm-hmm. Who also just appears, but also in just houses. Appears.
Half naked.
And then there are a couple of doctors and a couple of like psychiatrists and a couple other folks, little bits and pieces.
That's it.
Yeah. So Emily is played by Clara Landrat. I know that she was in Zoolander. She was in a movie called Going Wider. She was.
Oh, was she in Zoolander?
I couldn't tell you. I don't recall the movie.
Was she an extra?
I think she was probably one of the models in that.
Yeah,
probably.
And I know that she also has written, directed, and produced a number of shorts and a couple of things on television. So she's actually kind of sort of peripherally been in the business.
I don't know what she's doing, what business she has in this one, but like, why she would do this one, because this wasn't that long ago.
I know, right. So, anyway, Leia is played by an actress named Jennifer Autry. Jennifer has been in the Angel TV series. She played some kind of a demon character. She was only in like one or two briefly episodes there. She was in a movie called After Romeo and Juliet, and she was a model. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Then there is Amy, a silicon chick. she goes by Victoria Valens or Victoria Viveros. She was in a couple of movies called Bleach and Sin City Bounty, and she was also in a bunch of TV and shorts. The husband, the drunk guy who ends up knocking shit everywhere and gets shot, is named David Silva. I got nothing on this guy. This is the only thing he's ever been in.
I can kind of see why. Yeah.
And then finally, there is the minxy little Allie, played by Danielle Andrade. She's also been in a number of shorts and TV shows. She's in TV shows called Good Luck Charlie, The Goldbergs, yeah. Kicking It.
Was this after? This had to have been after.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, like, you know, nobody goes from The Goldbergs and all these Disney shows to being in this crap.
Right, right. And then something about a thousand things to do in high school. She plays a lot of cheerleaders. Like, she's a cheerleader in almost every one of these little TV things. So if that gives you an idea. And it's the dynamics of these characters and their interactions are very strange. Like, you know, okay, there's supposed to be this overarching theme about government secrets and lost love and all this stuff. But the middle of the film really centers on all of this drama, this family drama between him and his wife, or between the friends and their marriage difficulties.
What I thought was interesting, I guess you could say that, is they, like, tell you the drama. You don't see the drama, and you don't know anything about this government stuff.
Not till later. It pops up.
No, it just appears, like, all of a sudden, oh, by the way. Like, wait, what?
No.
Oh, we're having marital problems. Well, I'm glad you told me. We couldn't figure it out, literally.
Well, at least with the friends part, Amy and Jim, you can tell there's something wrong because Amy just yells every single line at Jim.
I just think that's just bad acting. Like, I didn't think that was her being mad, like, emotional. Like, I literally thought she was just, because she yells at almost every line.
I know, even when he's like 3 inches from her, she's yelling straight into his face. It's really strange.
And that's really the only emotion in the movie.
Well, I mean, at least I guess she's trying to give it a little bit of something, but for Neil Breen, I mean, you want to talk about acting. I mean, you want to talk about Wooden? You want to talk about Rod the Wooden Puppet from Birdemic? I mean, at least in Birdemic, there's enough of the film's focus on other people that you don't have to sit there and do nothing but watch Rod. Unfortunately, because this is such a vanity ego piece and it's all about Neil Breen, you are constantly watching Neil Breen act. And Neil Breen is not an actor. He's so wooden. He's just terrible.
And you got to see his ass.
Oh, yeah. You get to see his butt and his chest and his nipples and his shoulders.
Nipples.
And his thighs and all of the little bits and pieces. He has many Tommy Wiseau moments.
Yeah, it's not that enjoyable.
You don't get to see the women's nipples, but you get to see his.
You get to see side boob, though.
I guess that's the closest you're going to get.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. I don't think you do of the of silicone chick, and fortunately you don't have to on the 16-year-old girl. Although she tried.
I, he probably saw it, which is even creepier.
Oh, God.
It's like a 50-year-old man hiring a girl who looks like she's 16. Like, she literally looks 16.
And it's completely unnecessary. Why is that even in the movie? And then, how believable is this? The 16-year-old girl's crushing on Neil Breen? I don't think so.
And that dude looks like a pedophile at times, so I'm wondering, you know.
Well, he's got these weird dead eyes, like a doll's eyes.
The character. Yeah. I don't know about Neil himself, but that character. I mean.
And he was a total creeper. There were several moments, and it was like, oh. Like I told you guys earlier, if I saw this in a restaurant, I'd come over to see if the girl needed help. Well, do you want me to call you a cab? It's that level of creepiness.
Really weird things. Like, he ends up meeting Leia later on. After she's older, because of course, contrivance, when he gets hit by a car, she's not even his doctor, but she comes over and says, you know, I'm not his patient, or he's not my patient, but I just wanted to make sure he's okay.
What? Like, that didn't make any sense whatsoever.
Yeah, we find out later, she doesn't look at his chart or his name or anything. She just pops in, cuts in front of the wife and the friend, checks on him, makes some comments, and takes off.
Yeah. Okay. She said she's gonna check and she'll let them know something, or she'll find out something later about him. But like, and then she leaves. And
yeah. Okay.
But it's funny because he's sitting there with this massive pile of bandages on his face, and the oxygen is on the outside. Clearly, he's not getting any of it, mm-hmm. and he's got another mask on top of that that clearly is not feeding him any oxygen either. It's just very, very strange.
And then he wakes up from it, and he like doesn't ask for help or even like wonder why he's, you know, whatever.
He gets
up and he walks out and he goes home and he takes a shower with his mask still on.
No one stops him.
No.
No one says anything.
No.
Dude walking around
and he had the hospital gown on too.
So he walks around in a hospital gown. Somebody, a doctor, would come up and say, hey, aren't you supposed to be back to your room? Like, something like that would happen. Not in this movie.
No. And he goes home, and he's, like, dripping in this fake blood, and his wife immediately, like, walks into the shower with him, starts smooching him with all this nasty stuff all over
with
him.
With clothes on.
And his mask on.
And she has clothes on.
And I kept thinking of, oh, my God, she's going to kiss the mask. She's going to kiss that filthy, disgusting, germ-ridden mask.
And she didn't.
I know, y'all were disappointed in that.
I really wanted it.
Yeah. Of course, no one at the hospital, they call the hospital. What we're seeing out.
Remember, this is the same trash panda who will take things out of the toilet. We'll get to that.
Oh, yeah. Well, they don't understand, but the woman, we'll talk about that.
Yeah, the wife is very weird. She has all of these problems that she pretty much creates on her own. I don't understand why she's so upset about half the stuff that she's upset about. But she decides that she's unhappy, so she's going to start stealing his pain medication. And, you know, it's funny because there's a scene where he's like, honey, where's my pain medication? And she says, I'm get it. And then she goes to the bathroom and gets it. And she goes, I have your pain medication here, and steals some. And then she walks over and says, here is your pain medication, and gives it to him. And then he says, you know, I don't need this pain medication, even though he just asked for it. And he makes a point of getting up and going over to the toilet. She's like, no, no, don't throw it away. And he's like, I'm throwing it away. I don't need this pain medication, which he just asked for. Takes off the lid, throws the pills into the toilet, and walks out. And the first thing she does is get on her knees and shove her hands into the dirty, nasty, filthy, disgusting, germ-ridden toilet and fish those damn pills out. And I'm like, put them in your mouth. Put them in your mouth. Please, put them in your mouth. And these guys are like, no, no, no.
And the sad thing about, you know, you're repeating the dialogue is, that wasn't an exaggeration.
I know.
I want to say that is actually a Neil Breen thing, to repeat the diet. So I feel like it should be called Neil Breening when you repeat.
Breening.
Breening.
I like it.
Yeah, you should be Breening. Because you kind of repeated what you were saying, and I was like, you're Breening yourself.
Right. I cannot believe you committed suicide.
It says it like, I mean, all the characters say stuff like 10 times.
Oh, yeah.
At least one time, they'll say something at least 10 times.
Well, and that's the sort of thing I have seen elsewhere that I think is more along the lines of just filling up space and giving people filler dialogue. I don't think that's the case in the Oberyn world. I think this is him thinking that this is how people really speak. I honestly don't think he has an ear for real dialogue. I'm not even sure he's ever I don't think he's ever listened to actual human beings speak ever. And
human beings? He's above that. He's Neil Breen.
I know. And that's the problem. He can make magical mushrooms turn into magic boxes at will.
I mean, this is the first Neil Breen movie I've ever seen. And wait, this is not your first. Oh, you know, right? So, I mean, I don't know.
There's a lot of common themes that go on with this, and he's always that guy who has the extra powers, the extra, you know, goes the extra mile to find the extra stuff because he can and nobody else can. It's a very, very ego-driven, like you pointed out. And it's funny because the very first time I saw this, even though I couldn't make it all the way through, my initial thought was...
Hey, wait a minute. That's not fair. You couldn't make it all the way through. You made us sit all the way through. You couldn't your first time.
Three quarters of the way through.
Doesn't count.
It was
rough.
He told
me that earlier. I was just like shocked that this is the first time he's actually seen the whole thing.
Well, it's the first time we've gotten to see the ending, like the last 15 minutes.
So you hadn't seen the whole thing before you made us all watch it.
Nope. It was good and it was bad enough that I knew you had to see it.
Thanks.
But the first time I saw it, I immediately thought of that one scene in Ed Wood, where Ed Wood is talking about how, I write and direct and produce and do all this and everything, and the only ones who do that are me and Orson Welles. I'm like, and now Neil Breen.
Tommy Wiseau.
I know.
I mean, there are a million people.
Although I don't know that Tommy Wiseau does everything. I mean... The thing is that he, you know, this guy does everything. He does all of that different stuff. The difference is, of course, is that, Orson Welles can do it because he's Orson Welles. He's great. Ed Wood is an Orson Welles wannabe, but he's not very good. He's terrible. But Neil Breen is worse. Neil Breen makes the same bad movie over and over and over again. You know, there's just no getting better. He's the Groundhog's Day of movie directors. He really is.
Oh, jeez.
Neil Breen is not going to be happy with this.
I'm sorry. But, you know, that's the thing, though. If you go onto his Kickstarter page, he promises that the new one, Twisted Pair, is bigger and better than ever. It's like the biggest, best thing he's ever done.
Oh, he's still my beating heart.
Let me just go rush out to that Kickstarter then.
There you go. I expect you all want your Blu-ray copies.
What are we on? We were on characters.
Characters. So we got through all the characters, right?
Pretty much.
So, except for the fiance. We didn't talk about the fiance.
Who's fiance?
Oh, he came in
Leah's fiance.
Oh, yeah. That
he came
guy,
in for like...
That slip of a human being that barely exists.
No.
He's only in it for like a little bit of a subplot thing where they're just kind of like teeny tiny subplot where he's okay, so there's a party. Let's talk about that party.
Oh, yeah,
okay, wait. We need to go back because you started talking about the plot of the movie.
Right.
And then you got taken off.
Is.
Yeah. Because there's lots of things, if you don't go through the plot chronologically, I mean, it's not going to make sense no matter what.
No, it's not.
But.
I'm going to say that's like a Neil Breen thing to do.
Yeah.
Well, you can't say that. You've only seen this one. So there.
Well, that seemed like a thing to do with this movie.
So he left the hospital. He's supposed to be a writer?
He's supposed to be a writer. He's written these books, although all the books that he look like encyclopedias.
And they're
blank.
They're blank.
And he's signing them. He's signing blank things. I thought was happening. He was signing them before he wrote them, right? Because he knew people were going to buy whatever. Mm. Because later, they are filled with stuff.
Right.
So I'm like, wait, so you took those blank pages, actually put stuff in them, and so now he's going to give them out to people, you know, right? Because he's expecting that people are going to flaunt to run to his
books. So he's sitting there, and not only is he writing in blank books and signing them, he's got basically blank laptop computers, like six of them sitting there. And you can tell they're dead because, you know, they sound... Like when you know, it doesn't make that nice tapping sound when you actually have an actual real functioning computer. They all sound like they're dead, and they are dead. Mm-hmm. And he tosses them around. He spills coffee on them. He throws books at them. He has several hissy fits.
Coffee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The coffee scene is ridiculous.
The infamous
coffee
scene. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you know he's had his little head injury from the car, and he's complaining about it. He passes out. Then he wakes up and he's like tries to take a sip. And he ends up just spilling it all over the place. And then he lays there with his face in the puddle of coffee for about 30 seconds. We have
moaning.
To sit there. I know.
Oh,
and
it's
just won't cut away.
Horribly inappropriate.
And again, it's so ego-driven. It's like, we're not interested in watching you do this. Please cut to something else. It's like, nope, you're going to watch me act in this scene every single second. You're going to get a spoon and just suck up every single bit of me. I'm giving you my all.
Yeah. All right, so
comes home. We have to meet the friends.
We meet the friends,
who are arguing and having marital problems because she won't sleep with him, and he loves his Ferrari
like,
more than
she
her.
She hasn't slept with him in like months or something.
Something like
right.
that.
Three
yeah,
months.
Yeah, 3 months, something like that. So he's upset about that, and he's all. And apparently, I guess what makes her not want to do it is that he's out with his car all the time instead of being with her.
And
or
her
something.
Back hurts.
And her back hurts.
And she has problems at work, which it sounds like, they never explained, but it sounds like her and Neil's, what's her name?
Emily.
Emily, yeah, work together?
Right.
At the same bank?
Yeah, because they both work at banks, and both the banks have problems.
And let's face it, I can understand why her back hurts, because basically she's Chesty McBoobs a lot, and that's an awful lot of straightening you have to do all day long when you've got these 75-pound bags of silicone dragging the front of your body down all day long.
You're just upset because you didn't get any topless shots of her.
We got side boob, that's it.
We got side boob, that was plenty. Uh-huh. I didn't need to see anything else.
Yeah. So we see that, and then Leah decides, no, not Leah, the wife. Why did I forget her name? Emily?
Amy.
Amy.
Amy and Emily sound very similar.
Yeah.
And Leah's the one that's different.
Emily is the wife. Amy is the doctor chick.
No. Leah's the doctor chick.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. You're right.
Yeah, Leah. Oh, my God.
Amy,
did you write that down wrong?
Amy is
I think
is,
you did.
Is Chesty McBoobs a lot.
Yes. So Amy is the Amy is the friend, and Emily's the girlfriend. Lee is the doctor.
Right.
All right. So now that we got that straight.
Allie's the daughter.
And I don't like it. All right. So we got those main people, but yeah.
There just seems to be a lot. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was gonna say there seems to be a lot of nothing that happens.
Oh yeah.
Until we get the barbecue where the doctors show up. For
right,
whatever
there's
reason.
All kinds of Kentucky Fried Nothing going on in the
and
first
And they have part. The hamburger buns with no burgers.
Right? It's just very strange. Yeah,
that was so strange.
They're sitting there like at a dinner party at one point, and all the plates are empty, and they're all just, what a wonderful dinner this is.
Yeah.
Food will be ready soon, but no one's in the kitchen.
Before that, though, we had the dinner scene also, where the friends came over with the daughter or whatever, and they had the... I guess that was before they tell each other, oh, we should have a cookout or whatever, which, like, okay. But, so they come in there and they're eating, but they're not eating. There's no food on the table. That was so strange. At least in the barbecue, there was some chicken and there was a hot dog and a hamburger bun with no hamburger. I mean, at least
corn that's... that they're just grabbing with their hands.
Hey,
no
I do that from time to time.
And it's funny because you know that's right. You know that one dinner scene is that's like the first time you notice that Allie's kind of got a thing a little bit for Neil Breen's character. You know, he asks her innocently about you know how school, and she's like, oh, well, I'm working on my paper. It's about elephants in Africa. And the drunk dad is like, oh, he doesn't give a shit about that. He doesn't want to care about that. And she's like, I have to be excused now.
No, my favorite part is, though, he looks at her and goes,
I want to hear about our project.
Right.
You know, like, and then she still freaks out.
And there it sparks the love that she has for him.
Was that really the spark?
I don't know. Something must have sparked her.
I don't know, because she does, like, get drawn to him.
I know. Or whatever. It's really creepy and strange.
That is, yeah. And there's no point to it.
No, there's not. Well, I guess.
Film.
No, there is probably. I think what it is that you're supposed to make, you're supposed to think that he's noble. That he's, you know, that this hot young chick is throwing herself, and he, but because she's underage, she's like, no, you must stop doing that. You must stop doing that. Please stop doing that. He was breaning, of course.
I feel like he was, like, accused at one point of being a child molester.
I don't know.
And so he wrote the scene in this movie, so you can look back, and if somebody says, you're like a child molester, he can be like, hey, look at this scene in this movie. I turned people down.
I don't know. She was standing around in her bikini.
Oh, I know. Yeah, that was great. That's great. So she goes over to their place to go in the pool in her little bikini, and she doesn't actually go in. I mean, she goes in like part way and just goes a little splash here.
Not even part way, like up to her knees, right. Maybe.
Little tiny splash. And then she goes, you know, Dylan, and he's like upstairs inside working at his desk and hears her somehow, and looks out the window, and she's like all being a coquette and everything, and then immediately she like steps into the bathtub.
So what I had said, I think, when we were watching the scene is that as the director of that movie, he had to have seen her naked.
I guess so.
Or something, you know, or whatever, close to it at least. That is creepy. I'm sorry. Like, even if she's like hiding it or whatever, he can see, like, so that means he asked a young girl. Now, she may have been 18 or something.
Oh, I'm sure she was 18.
I really hope she was 18.
I'm sure she was.
For the sake of, like, anything, you know, whatever. But,
yeah, no, I'm sure she
was. Oh, God, that's so creepy.
But the thing about that demonstrates the futility of trying to figure out in the Aubrey movies is that, you know, like I said, it's instantaneous from being the coquette at the pool looking up and knowing that she's got his attention to immediately being walking into the bathtub. There's like no sense of time. It's like, you know, there's these really strange jump cuts that mess with your sense of time. It's like, how did this happen just now?
Yeah, and every now and then he shows up at the psychotherapist's office.
Oh yeah.
And that time goes.
And there's two of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's the one weird old guy.
We'll get to that after we're still stuck on this story, trying to get through this story because it's all.
Well, we didn't mention them as characters, but yeah, there's the one old guy, and then there's the one old woman, the one who lives in the broom closet.
And they have the same last name, so we're thinking they might be a husband and wife in real life. Everything, which is good, whatever.
Yeah, the one guy's trying to push the pills on him, and that's where he gets his pills from. And then she's all, like, touchy-feely, new-agey, kind of, you know, let them get your spirit.
Of course, he also has the ginormous conference table, and they're sitting at either end of it.
Yeah, they're not even close by each other. They're, like, you know, across from each other.
It's almost like one of those joke movies where they show the palaces with the long table and, like, Coming to America.
And it's funny because the opposite, she's in this tiny, tiny, tiny little space where you might expect a mop to be, and they are sitting literally like right in each other's laps practically.
Maybe that's a thing with Neil Breen. Maybe he does not like male, like whatever, because like he's far apart from the male doctor, but he's like this close to the female doctor, you know, even though she's not attractive or whatever, like in that sense, like, he's not attracted to her, but he's still, like, that close.
No, but it doesn't surprise me, because if you notice, he's always touching the women. He's always, you know, in some kind of position of authority or manipulation where he can control them. So that's another thing I noticed
about him. That could be a thing, because, like, he's a director, right? So, and he's a writer and producer. He does all of it, right? And this is his way of controlling women. He controls all these women, makes them kiss him, you know, basically by putting them in this movie and everything. And, I mean, I wonder how many of them go, you know, can we just not kiss?
Honestly, I think it's just control in general. I think that's just part of his egocentric sort of personality, because really when you look at it with Jim's death too, I mean, he pretty much gets to pick him up and manhandle him and move him around and like move him like a puppet pretty much. But we haven't quite gotten to that scene yet.
No, because he meets Leah at the
barbecue.
And they reconnect, and they're totally creepy. That part creeps me out.
A totally contrived way, too. She just happens to drop the little notebook that she had when she was 8, where it said, it's a magical day.
Yeah, it's not worn, it's not torn, it's not discolored, and it's a huge-ass notebook. How does it fit in her front pocket? Things do not fit in women's jeans front pockets. Yeah. Nothing
and
does.
She's like, I've been carrying this with me for good luck.
Yeah.
Really, how's that worked out for you? You're stuck in a Neil Breen movie.
Yeah.
Not very good luck. But yeah, no, that was so strange. And then he like touches her all creepy like, and like touches her hair and sniffs her hair.
Oh yeah, I know. He's like his like face is practically in her hair. I think at one point I noticed like I'm expecting him to snort her entire hair into his mouth. You know, which is very weird. You know, and he just keeps doing this. It's just strange. But yeah, that's where he reconnects with the doctor, where stuff starts to get bad between the friends because drunk Jim is like starting to, I guess he was kind of hitting on the wife.
Mm-hmm. You know, sort of, but not really. Like it didn't even seem that bad. And then she like looks over and like, you're drunk, get away from me. You know,
he does the worst stumble ever. End up in the pool.
That would have been great. I would have loved that.
That would have been much better.
It reminded me of that scene in Night of the Ghouls where the drunk kind of walks in and is like, and just kind of stumbles and then wanders back out.
That was a very, very much like that scene. And it was so strange, like the whole bit, because obviously it was there for the story of her later on. Mm-hmm. Like, he comes back later on, which made absolutely no sense, because, like, nobody in their right mind would even think about that or remember that situation like that.
Yeah.
And, like, think that they drove a guy that crazy or whatever, but anyway.
Well, and if you're, at this point, if you're all wondering why we're talking about this stuff and what it has to do with hacking government secrets and espionage, there's nothing. It has nothing to do with it. It's just, this is what's going on at this point. It's this really weird family dynamic potboiler that has nothing to do with what happens in the last third of the film.
Yeah. See, that would have been more interesting if, like, there was some more stuff, the hacker stuff. Like, less stuff with the drama and the family and everything like that, but more about the hacker, you know, people. Like, the government stops by his house or something. But I just wouldn't.
Well, the problem is he has no idea what he's talking about.
Right.
It's just vague stuff. He's like, I'm getting government secrets that are secret from the government. Okay, well, that's great. That tells me absolutely nothing. You know? But anyway, so there's all this family drama stuff, and it's after the barbecue and after Jim's thoroughly crass little drunk thing at the party that it starts to unravel between Jim and Amy. And once again, he starts pestering her for sex. And she pushes him away. He goes back to the car. She decides that the way she's going to handle this in her brilliant silicone brain, she decides to pull out a gun. And she's like, I'm going to shoot this car full of holes. And she just fires it once and, of course, shoots him dead.
Yeah, like, how can you miss that badly? Like, that you hit him so bad, like, not even where it hurt him. It literally killed him right then and there.
Instantly.
He was dead. Yeah. So, like, she must be, like, literally the worst shot. Because she was supposed to be aiming for the car. And in real life, if she had hit anything, she probably would have hit his leg or some part of his shoulder or something. That literally killed him.
It's really my favorite scene in the film because the entire 10-minute thing unfolds like an avalanche of badness. Okay, so you have the ridiculous over-the-top fight.
A very slow avalanche.
Yes.
Now, when we're talking about drama here, think very slow drama.
Right.
Slow avalanche. Mm-hmm. Everything dipped in molasses.
Right. So we have the family thing, family drama. We have the gun going off. Meanwhile, Neil Breen has shown up, and he's at the door trying to get in. So he hears this, and he hears the gun going off. He's like, Jim and Abe, what's going on?
And it appears that he's in a garage. Jim, while he's with his car, is in the garage, and Dylan is at the front door, which is right next to the garage.
But with his super brain senses, he detects that something is wrong. Meanwhile, Allie comes in, or just pops in.
Pops in.
Pops in, and she's like, you have shot Dad. This is not good. And the wife's like, you didn't see anything. You didn't see anything. Go call 911. And then plants the gun on the guy, even though his fingerprints are all over it.
Sets it on the ground next to him.
with the shell as well.
Uh-huh. Which really confused the hell out of me. Okay, so that's his or her stepdaughter, Allie, right? Like, they're not mother and daughter. They're stepdaughter.
I guess not.
And that's her real father.
Right.
Right. And yet, she's okay with just calling 911.
Yeah, yeah.
And not reporting that her stepmother just murdered her dad.
Right.
And on top of that, she knows it. Because she, like, she actually just, not only does she say, I saw you murder him, but she tries to go help her dad or do something. I don't know what.
And she just gets pushed away.
She gets pushed away and called 911. In a real situation, a person would call the cops and say, my stepmother just murdered my dad. Her fingerprints are all over the gun. There is no way, like, in hell.
And she says it later on, too. He wasn't suicide. Mom killed him.
Right. So she knows this.
So she gets pushed away. She doesn't really, it doesn't really struggle that much. And she gets pushed away. Mm-hmm. Neil Breen decides, okay, I'm walking in. So he walks in and immediately goes right to the garage, of course, where Amy is there going, he killed himself. He killed himself. And then he has his little meltdown where he runs over and he grabs and starts cradling him, and he makes sure to get all the blood smeared all over him.
Well, wait, with the blood. So he gets shot, and we see him lying there with some blood delightfully painted on him. And then when Dylan walks in, then the blood starts flowing.
Right, it's somebody's pumping it off camera.
Which makes me wonder if he's got that power.
Well, he moved several times, too. I mean, it looked, he was like, he's still breathing.
Yeah. So anyway, go ahead to finish that.
Oh yeah. So he has his, Neil Breen has his big acting moment where he melts down and he's gathering his friend in his arms and he's smearing the blood all over him.
I can't believe you committed suicide. I cannot believe you committed suicide. How could you have done this? How could you have committed suicide? I can't help you out of this one, Jim.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. It was like, I can't believe you would do this. I can't believe you would do this. And then he looks over and goes, I can't help you this time or whatever.
You guys are putting way too much emotion into
I know.
It.
Well, see, we're better actors, apparently.
The point is, this scene is like a 10 or 12 minute slow train wreck.
Uh-huh.
It's so bad. It really, to me, is the central nugget of crap in this film that I really love, because it just demonstrates incompetence by everybody in every conceivable possible way. You know, it's just so bad and so bizarre. I can't say enough about that scene. It's marvelous. It's wonderful. It's terrible. It's shitty.
You know, I was just looking at Neil Breen. He looks a little like a taller, uglier version of Martin Short. Sorry, random
I thought perhaps he like kind of came. I mean, if anyone's going to come down and be an alien, I thought it might be Neil Breen. I don't know. It's just there's just
like
something different about him. You know,
maybe he is an alien.
It could very well be.
I mean, he doesn't understand human.
Right, and he explains all his superpowers. Right.
We
haven't even gotten to that yet.
Oh my god. Yeah, because that doesn't pop up till like the end of the movie, like the third act.
When he's back, you know, when he's past all the family drama and back into the espionage part.
Right.
So anyway, now that poor Jim is dead, this is the part where the wife, who I guess is feeling that nobody's paying attention to her anymore, decides that everything is her fault. And Emily's like, oh my god, it's all my fault, it's always me, and blah blah blah, and starts creating more problems. And then, you know, that goes on for a bit until she eventually finally puts everybody out of her misery by taking several pills. You know?
Well, right before she does that, Dylan and Leah hook up in the woods.
Right. They bump into each other all of a sudden.
They bump into each other, and then on top of that, she's now doesn't have a fiance.
That's right.
Right. Like, again, she found what she was looking for again or whatever, which does not happen.
No.
And like this is a Neil Breen world.
If
like,
that's what you're looking for, you no.
I know.
I have no words for that.
I know. There's just no nodding connection to reality whatsoever.
No.
So meanwhile, while Wifey Poo is wigging out on herself and swallowing pills like they're Tic Tacs, he's off with the Dr. Chick, and they decide to go back and do their little walkie-walkie through the woods again, and the same weird little skull that watched them when the movie first opened is doing the exact same thing. They go back to the exact same tree, and lo and behold, there's the magic mushroom again. And the same, they play out pretty much the same scene all over again.
Except they're like taking out the stuff that they put in, right?
Right.
Like basically.
Right.
And stuff like that. And it's just, it's like, you know, when you bury stuff or whatever, like a time capsule. This is like his stupid version of a time capsule, I guess,
right,
with magic mushrooms.
And by the way, when we say buried, we kind of really mean just kind of kick a few leaves on top and that's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe pine needles, just gently cover it.
And a little bit of pixie dust. Don't forget the pixie dust. So he's deciding now, of course, that he's really reconnecting with her. And probably is thinking to himself he's going to kick Emily to the curb anyway. So conveniently, Emily does off herself and gets rid of
herself.
She
kicks herself to the curb.
She does. She kicks herself to the curb. And now he's free to have Dr. Amy. And then she spends pretty much the rest of the movie, topless side boob in bed, covered up.
He does not care that his wife just died.
No, he really doesn't.
He
but he is so busy doing all this internet hacking with the corporations and the banks and the governments and all their super, super secrets.
Right. At one point during all this, he does pick up the phone and he says, Emily is dead. She killed herself. And then he drops it. And that's it. That is it. That is the last you hear of any of that.
Yeah.
And he's moved on. He's moved on from whiny Emily to somewhat competent Amy. Amy, Leia.
Leia. Yeah.
So now this is the third part of the film. This is where he can now focus, because now he's got the chick he really wants, on the fact that he is breaking into quote-unquote governments and corporations and seeing all their secrets and blah, 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 blah. And then this is where it starts to get really weird, because I guess people know, and so they start sending these shadowy feet at him, and there are these weird feet that walk in his room, and the mirrors start shaking, and it's just, there's this really weird, unnecessary stuff that's going on.
Well, throughout the movie, there'll be, like, the blinds will move, or you have that little bit of fairy ghost fart stuff that will come by, and you'll see random men's dress shoes and slacks walk through. I mean, just, like, thrown in there. Like, oh, by the way, there's some supernatural stuff here.
Right, yeah. Right.
Just to remind you, you may not have realized it in the 10 minutes it took to say these two sentences. They're still paranormal, you know, supernatural,
because
whatever.
Because Neil Breen's character has superpowers, as always.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah.
One of the faceless agents decides he has to steal the Dr. Leia. So he gets a little bottle of hydrogen peroxide and he pours.
So obviously hydrogen peroxide.
Pours that into a napkin and kidnaps her, mm-hmm. And somehow Neil Breen figures this out, and he walks around, and the guy who kidnaps her just happens to drop the little card that says, you know, take the woman and bring her to this address. So he finds her because the address is on the card.
He finds her, but you gotta remember, he also found her from the card, but while he's on the phone,
he's on the phone
trying to, you know, like, pick up, and I'm like,
I'm worried about you.
So your purse is on the ground.
I'm
concerned about you.
I'm looking at the purse. You're not with the purse.
Oh.
You must be someplace. I will find you. You know, and he just kind of goes on and belabors the point.
Oh.
But, you know, because the information is clearly written on the card, he goes there. And then there's the same guy that we saw is just kind of like laying against the trailer, just like
he doesn't care. Drunk or something?
He does not care.
He's the worst kidnapper I've ever seen in a movie. Like, the worst kidnapper.
I'd be kidnapped. He can kidnap me.
Yeah, really.
Okay. Well, no, because he'd just leave you there, and then,
you'd be
gagged and blindfolded. But,
yeah,
like,
Neil might save me. Never mind.
Yeah, never mind. You're good.
I was thinking of the terrible kidnappers in the Wang Wang movie, where they're all looking in the wrong direction all the time. You know, this guy wasn't even doing that. He was just, like, slumped against
Maybe
the trailer.
Maybe he studied from them.
He wanted to be worse than them.
But it's great. So Neil Green gets tough, and he's, like, threatening the guy. He's like, tell me where she is. I don't know, I don't know. You know, knocks him out with a bottle. And then he starts to do his little mystical, magical po-jam stuff. And he vanishes and reappears on the other side of the wall inside of the trailer where... He meets her.
Yes. And thank goodness the kidnapper was sitting next to a big black truck in the middle of a parking lot.
Where he happened to stick.
We know exactly. Yeah.
Yep. Just like it said on the card.
Yep.
So he finds her there. First he takes off with the gags and the blindfold and says, you know, oh, I've got you, blah, 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 blah. Now you need to put this stuff back on because I can't show you what's going to happen. She's like, okay. And then he uses the magical ability to transport her, both of them, outside of the trailer. She could just open the door, for God's sakes.
Well, the door was locked.
Uh-huh.
So there was no way for him to unlock it without, you know, maybe asking for the key.
Or searching the guy.
The guy who she knocked out, yeah.
Well, you know, just searching the dude and finding a key, I mean... We have to have mystical power.
Because it's Neil Breen. You got to show how he's different than everybody else.
Oh, he's different.
He's Neil Breen and we are not. Yes. Remember that. That's the key theme of this movie.
I wonder if he really thinks he can, like, do that. Like, you know, just materialize.
Neil Breen might actually have done it for all we know. I don't have no idea. So, at this point, he saves his I guess, new wife, his new trophy wife. And now he's decided that... you know, he's talked again with the shrinks, and they have vanished too, and there's more mirror shaking and more weird stuff, and he's decided he's got to go public, and he calls this press conference. You don't actually see anybody there.
He calls the press conference himself.
He does, and there's like, you don't see anyone. You see like 8 or 10, you know, microphones, and then you hear like canned applause. Polite canned applause, and then he's up there with a green screen with a capital in the background, and he's just saying all kinds of like bland, you know, one-dimensional stuff. I have found secrets. Corporations were being bad, and I'm exposing them. And then one by one, each person comes up. It's like there's a congressperson. Oh, I've been bad, and now I'm caught, so I guess I'll kill myself. And the banker's like, oh, I've been bad, and I guess I've been caught.
We stole people's money.
We give up. Yeah. Okay. Neil Breen is better than us. I'm all, just going to die.
You know, all the insurance companies are going to, you know, going down.
And Congresswoman's like, oh, yeah, I've been bad. Neil Breen caught us, and I would have gotten away with it if it weren't for Neil Breen and his kids.
Talk about how that one lady died in her car.
Oh, yeah. The Congresswoman who gives up, she's like, you know, I can't live with myself anymore. So she goes into her garage, turns on the car, and I guess she's supposed to kill herself through carbon monoxide poisoning. The problem is she rolls up her windows nice and tight so that the carbon monoxide can't actually get in, which is not the way you do it.
Yeah, and real
not
life...
Not that we're giving suicide
advice.
Advice.
Well, we're not trying to tell you you should go and do this. But this is not how...
But if you're going to stage it, you either have the car in the garage with the car running with the windows down so that you breathe in all that crap, or you have a hose, you connect it to the back of your car where the carbon monoxide is coming out, you feed that into the car, and then you close the windows because there's no place for the carbon monoxide to escape.
I mean, it feels like that would be... the legitimate thing that Neil Breen would put in there.
If he knew what he was doing.
No. But then he would have the windows up or whatever, because everything he's done has been wrong.
Right.
Like, if we're actually correct, If it were actually correct, we might be impressed. You know? Like,
right.
As impressed as we could.
So yeah, basically he rats on all the awful bad people. They all confess spontaneously and kill themselves, and everybody lives happily ever after. And Neil Breen is awesome, and everyone hails him as a hero, and he's marvelous, and we're not.
Yeah, we don't get any explanation for anything.
No, there's no explanation for anything.
No,
And
it was a fairly long movie.
Oh yeah,
it was an hour and 40 minutes. So
but in the beginning, you're like, "Oh, this is taking." I said it was taking forever, and you said it was 18 minutes, but it was only 10.
Yeah,
that gets you an idea.
There is so much Neil Breen awesomeness that it couldn't be contained in a normal hour and a half film. He needed to go more to give you more.
Yeah, I mean,
10 minutes was enough for me, really. The first 10 minutes when he wasn't in it.
Well, you could have gotten more butt scene.
Oh.
First, well, actually,
I would have preferred to see the women naked than that butt.
I think we all agree with you on that.
Yeah.
Yep, we all agree.
And it's not like we're talking about a real handsome guy here either. He's very, very bland. His haircut is very awkward. It's like, dude, it's one large comb over. Just get yourself cut. He's always, like, willing to show himself naked, and none of us want to see this.
Yeah, because there are, we didn't talk about this, there are these weird scenes of him that I guess is supposed to be in this black cave, and he's kneeling naked, and then we're talking, they last, what, 30 seconds to a minute long, no explanation, and then towards the end, these random scenes will pop up, and he's there with a naked woman, who we still can't figure out who it was or who it was supposed to be.
Right.
And they're sort of embraced.
I guess they're supposed to be symbolic.
Yeah, of what?
I don't know. But I tell you, I want
this. This is your movie.
Those scenes reminded me of the fake black tarp scenes in Suburban Sasquatch. So,
yeah.
You know, so that was kind of fun. I like to see that.
There was no explanation for it.
Mm.
Right.
I mean, were they dreams? Were they visions? Did they symbolize? What did they
symbolize?
Well,
it's the same thing like the golden book that appears and disappears at random with a little sparkly gold stuff on there.
Oh, you mean the glitter that someone is obviously
off
dropping?
Camera,
from,
yeah. You know, that's supposed to be symbolic of something, but...
And the tassels that he gave Leah to make pasties out of?
So that was from one of the, I guess, black agents who tiptoes and you see his feet and he leaves them. I guess it's supposed to be a warning. What that warning is supposed to be.
But then didn't he give that to...
Yes.
Like, that's a present to her or whatever.
Here's some pasties for you, baby.
Yeah.
Oh my God. That's just... Ah.
Because remember, there are at least several times when you're watching them and I guess they're supposed to get really romantic and then it's when the clothes drop.
Yes.
There's your favorite part.
Drop. So you see them start taking their shirt off, facing each other. They're always facing each other. And then the camera focuses on their legs, their calves, and their feet. And you see the shirts drop. The clothes drop. The
actual drop.
Like, right. And he does that earlier in the movie with his wife, the first wife, the whiny, pill-popping wife. And they have that one scene where... You know, they've been fighting and all of a sudden, for some reason, she comes into the room and she's decided she's going to be all coquettish and everything. And they have that little scene where he's knocking his computers off the desk. He throws his papers like, oh, my goodness, I'm so carefree. And they do another clothes drop right there. And in fact, he tears her
clothes off. Which is funny because if you watch earlier, her shirt is cut.
Right.
The neckline is cut so that he can rip it off. And if you look at his shirt earlier in the scene, it's cut as
well.
Well,
that's...
I wonder. I was like, those are the weirdest looking shirts I've seen.
That's part of the many continuity errors that are with this particular film.
You know, since we talked about the story ad nauseum, like that took pretty much the whole freaking thing. Let's talk about the continuity.
Yeah. So there are many, many continuity errors. You know, like, as many at least was as the same as Birdemic. But some of them are just bad. Like, probably my favorite one was the one that you found. when he, you know, he's tapping the dead laptop, and then he stops. But the sound of the tapping still goes on, like, for seconds, like 5 seconds afterwards.
I liked it, too, because there was a pause when he stopped, and then the tapping started up again. That was the best.
Yeah, that was great.
So bad.
That was part of his superpowers.
Maybe. Yes. That's, I mean... See, that's the problem with doing like a superpowers movie like this. You can say anything is, you know, you can say a continuity error at all is, oh, it's a, you know, Ed Wood could say that that was, you know, that's supposed to be, you know, that person would struggle with that superpower issue.
Right.
You know, when he did.
But I mean, at least Double the Avenger handled that a little bit better than this movie did.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
Double the Avenger handled this, you know, handled this movie a lot better than this movie.
Oh yeah.
Period.
Absolutely. You know? Well, at least through the part of the superpowers. But yeah, yeah, there are an awful lot of bad continuity errors, and frankly, I doubt Neil Breen even cares. I mean, you know, it's not about him, so he doesn't really care about that.
And it's hard to follow some of the continuity because you don't know how many days have passed. They never do they show any exterior shots?
Well, every now and again, when it suits them, when it's showing off Neil Breen.
But no, when you think about it, they show the outside's the pool, but they show his office, the bedroom.
They show the
living room, the other couple's bedroom, the garage,
and the broom closet.
The two office spaces and the stairwell inside. There's no, the mountains.
The mountains.
Like the building exterior.
The beach.
None of that.
And I actually love that.
There's not a beach.
Well, whatever, the lake or whatever, where they meet each other.
Where the ducks are swimming
to get the hell away from these idiots.
Yeah.
As fast as they can.
Yeah, they're like, let's go. Let's go. Yeah, get going.
We don't want to start breathing.
Hey, we never signed a permission to be in this movie.
Yeah.
The other fun continuity area is the doctor, the old guy who's pushing the pills, where, you know, he's in a gray suit and then he's in a blue suit. And then he has the laptop.
Light blue suit.
Right. And he has the laptop, and then he doesn't have the laptop.
Mm-hmm. But then the woman, psychotherapist or whatever, is always wearing the same dress. So right. Is it a different day?
His shirt several times.
Yeah, but he only has like 4 shirts.
I don't know. At least he's got them on at those scenes. Be thankful for that.
True. And they're clean.
That's true.
Okay.
And not ripped.
And not ripped. Yeah. Not yet, anyway. But, so it's the whole broom closet thing is very, very strange. I don't quite get that. And I don't really quite get the whole, she's like some kind of new agey, mystical, magical, witchy sort of thing. I don't get that at all either. She's, you know, it's very strange. It's like he goes to her as a complimentary sort of thing to balance what the guy is doing, but he's just ignoring.
But it doesn't explain how he got in contact with her. Or why, or did the other psychotherapist, also meet with her? No, it just all of a sudden he goes in one day and it shows the door to a new office and he goes in there. You don't even see him go inside.
Right.
You see the door and then he's inside with this woman.
He's not interested in the details about other characters. He's only interested in showing you details about him because the movie's all about him.
I don't need to see the details of his butt.
Yeah, I hear you. I'm right with you about that.
Or his nipple.
Right, right.
There you go.
Now, the funny thing is, you know, getting past continuity issues is, I did want to mention some of the cinematography. Some of the cinematography is not bad, and that makes it worse. Because in the beginning of the film, you're actually kind of looking at this and thinking, okay, this doesn't look too bad. You know, you've got the opening with the time stop, the time-lapse photography of the buildings. You've got the nice little cam shot of the little storage facility.
Oh yeah.
You've got the pretty shots of the mountains. Mm-hmm. You're thinking
it's all in focus.
It's all in focus.
It looks fairly good quality.
So what are you guys thinking? You're all thinking to yourselves, hey, this may not be too bad.
Oh, I still knew it was gonna be bad.
I know, it's like you know the monster is behind the door gonna jump out and kill the person.
Just when you think it's gonna be okay, that's when Neil Breen stabs you in the back with his egomaniacal.
You know, the kids weren't that bad either. Like I actually liked the kids. They were decent actors. They didn't, aside from the kid holding his hand out for like forever, that was not the kid's fault, though. He was told to do that.
Right.
You know, and I thought the two kids were pretty decent. So, yeah. I mean, they weren't, they didn't, you know, bother me at all. So, the writing was awful.
The writing was awful. The directing wasn't particularly great. But it
wasn't. Dialogue was horrendous.
The dialogue was horrendous. Neil Breen's acting is horrific. Absolutely horrific. Some of the other ones range to be okay. Like the doctor, the doctor chick Leia was decent, I have to say. Amy,
I felt bad for her.
So, you know, Amy, you know, Toots McBoobs a lot, was not a very good actress. And neither really was Jim, the guy who never really did anything before.
But I did wonder, as like you were saying, her screaming was the direction. You probably told her something like, act angry. Well, you don't scream all the time.
Every line.
Yes.
Right in front of people's faces.
It's like there's no buildup to an argument. An argument starts slowly, quieter, and then...
I thought the actress who played Allie, Danielle Adonde, she was a little awkward. She was not particularly good, but she wasn't terrible either.
I think this was probably one of her first movies and stuff, and she got to act. Like, that's what I felt like. And if it wasn't, then...
Yeah, it did have that.
And then the wife was not particularly convincing in a lot of stuff either, and especially whatever that accent was. I don't know where to place that or anything.
I mean, was she supposed to be an American?
I don't know.
Because her name was Emily, and like I just don't see that as
This is a self-financed film, so clearly he was less interested in their acting talent as they were, as he was interested in what they looked like. Mm. You know, because that's what's important to him. He wants beautiful people to make himself look good.
Oh, that he can kiss.
Right.
And touch their hair.
Oh, my God. And snort it into his nose. Very strange.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay, so I guess this is the point where we got to start wrapping up and talking about how we're going to score this movie.
Well, I already know.
Yeah, because there weren't really many special effects.
No.
I'm trying to think of everything when we talk about
the magic mushroom.
Others.
That's about it.
Or the disappearing into the... thing, you know, that was kind of a special effect. I mean,
well, we did have what was the computer and the books moving at one point.
Oh, yeah, for
the
no
drawer
reason.
Opened by itself.
Right.
It's strange.
Oh,
strange.
My God.
Just off, yeah. Those are so minor, though. I mean, it's not even worth mentioning.
Yeah, this wasn't a special effects laden film. If you know, like, and I think that's a little bit of the charm of the movie, if you want to say that.
No,
because,
I don't.
I know, but you see
charm.
What I'm saying. It had, like, because this could have obviously been a movie that had a lot of special effects in it or whatever, and made this guy even whatever, but he seemed like a normal guy that happened to be just abnormal.
Well, think about it this way. He doesn't want people focusing on special effects and explosions and all that kind of stuff. He wants the focus of everybody on him.
That's true. It's his ego, yeah.
It's massive ego, like you wouldn't believe. But anyway, getting back to the scoring, so we've been getting progressively worse as the season has gone on.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
And we've hit a few nines, and Birdemic gave us 9.5 across the board.
Oh.
And I'm here to say I think we hit our first 10. I really do.
Well, let's find out. So what did you think, Paul?
10. And I knew that coming in.
All right. Yes, I already said my score before. It is a 10.
I said that about halfway through the movie. I did, didn't I?
It did not take long. I said, I think this is going to be my first 10. I did not. It was so hard to watch. This movie is so bad.
I mean, it's so funny because remember, at one point, you thought Barn of the Blood Llama was the worst thing you had seen.
But then I'd also said I was afraid of what could be
worse.
That's
true. And then Birdemic was worse, and now this is worse than Birdemic.
I know. I thought I picked the worst one.
Challenge accepted.
This needs to be a contest, guys.
This is a pissing contest.
That's right,
baby. You fucking won.
I got more tens.
I don't know. Wait till Ankle Biters.
I can't wait.
It's we're not. Well, I haven't seen that movie in years, so I have no idea about that one. All right. Anyway, what do you say, Jen?
Oh, help me! Is that a good thing to say? Yeah, this was pretty bad. So what we're saying is we're gonna have multiple tens. Multiple really bad movies?
Well, at least...
We're not scaling them for, like, best to worst. We're, like...
Oh, we are at the end of the season, but
from
the...
From bad to many, many worse.
From for the moment, at least, you know, we had Suburban Sasquatch and Prehistoric Bimbos and Armageddon City were the worst. And then, you know, they all kind of got blown away by Barn of the Blood Llama. And then Birdemic upped it even more. So I guess the thing is that how to, in that range of movies, is this better or worse?
I think this is the worst. I think this is too.
Oh, y'all are buttheads.
All right, what do you
think? Yeah, this is the worst I've seen. Woo! So freaking boring.
Well, I remember during when we were watching this, you looked at me and you said, "This movie is terrible."
Well, and I was surprised because when y'all are talking about bad movies, as you often do, I was expecting more. You're talking about the worst movies, more along the lines of bad production, bad CGI, bad costumes, bad puppets, you know, stuff like that.
I wish there was a bad puppet.
Much knocking Roller Gator.
I know, that's why I keep saying you guys think Roller Gator was bad.
And that's what I was expecting when you were going worse, not so much dull, boring, unimaginative dialogue. I mean, with beautiful scenery.
I mean, this could have been a really good movie. I'm saying, plot-wise, like, somebody could have, if somebody rewrote the script, they could have made a good movie out of it. If they dropped him out of the whole thing, Neil Breen out of the whole thing, they could have made something interesting. Like, if somebody remade this movie, they could do something with it.
Well, they didn't. There were too many holes. There were too many things that weren't explained.
And I have to agree with Jen about this because if Hollywood had gotten this film, this would have been like a Will Smith movie. And it would have been the exact same thing. Will Smith can do no wrong. Will Smith does everything. And Will Smith would have gotten away with it because he's Will Smith. But because Neil Breen is not Will Smith, there's no way he can possibly get away with making a movie like this and not get reamed.
Right, but I don't think Will Smith would have made this movie. Like,
it would have had at least action in it.
Yeah, it would have had some action. And the dialogue would have been a lot better.
The guy got hit by the bottle, right?
That's true.
It was hot bottle action.
People killed themselves a lot in this movie.
But there's too many things, like the whole paranormal. I don't know, there were like two or three different plots going on and none of it made sense and none of it connected. And none of it mattered.
I know. As long as you were paying attention to Neil Breen, that's all that mattered.
By the way, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to do a drinking game, here's a really fun one. Every time that somebody repeats themselves, you drink.
Yes, drink every time there's a Breen going on.
Shit.
Breathing.
Black out halfway through the movie.
Hey, that's why I don't drink anymore. So
that's not necessarily a bad thing in this case.
Yeah. That's true.
You might actually like the movie.
Hey, I told you, I didn't quite make it all the way through the first thing. Okay, and I've seen all of Nick Zed's movies. Okay, if that gives you any idea.
I'm no worried about that.
I'm saving Nick Zed for a rainy day. Don't you worry.
Oh, yes.
So we have
second season.
We have three tens then. Our first ten is a we all agree.
So
a mutual ten. A 30.
This is a 30.
This is a maximum. We've maxed it out.
But you know what? I'm waiting for season two. I know that we'll have at least another one.
Oh yeah.
You know?
They're coming.
But can we take a break and do something a little better?
Oh, just wait till Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving is coming. Yeah. You talked about bad puppets.
So we got something
more enjoyable.
Actually, well, I like Thanksgiving, but that's fun. That's me. I don't know if you would.
It's cute. In a weird
way. We got some really fun ones coming up. I think they're a lot. I think they're not gonna be this bad.
Right.
You know.
We had to do a 10. We had to for the season one. So
we didn't.
We didn't do it before, but we had to do one, and so just as a comparison. Lord. So I figured we had to do Neil Breen. People, and this is the same thing. Just like Birdemic, I had a couple friends say, "Have you guys done a Neil Breen movie yet?" And I said,
you know,
no.
I think you need to find new friends.
Well, it's just my thing. When people find out you love bad movies, they're always willing to dig up one and say, have you seen this? This is terrible.
Yeah, and a friend of mine was like, you have never seen a Neil Breen movie before? I was like, no.
It's like, if you like Tommy Wiseau, you'll love Neil Breen.
Honestly, I'd never heard of him until you said we're doing one of his movies. So I, just like Nick Zed or whatever, I never heard of that guy, but I'm...
Andy Milligan, or, you know, any one of those kind of films. We haven't even done a Coleman Francis movie yet.
I'd heard of him.
So there's plenty out there, but it was time. It was time to do a 10. Mm-hmm. And Jen, you got through it. Think about that. You saw
you got through it, and you didn't kill yourself.
Maximum Carnage, and you got through
it. No, but I thought about killing y'all.
Why me? I didn't know about this.
That's true.
I'm just kind of like, I'm a sucker brought in as well.
Oh, don't be Mr. Kennison. Come on.
Yeah, you're definitely not.
I'm not a sucker, because I did bring you guys some. I brought you Birdemic, and
you
I brought you Night of the Ghouls. And,
there you go.
You know,
but yeah, so
Romeo
this
and Juliet.
I had seen another Neil Breen one before, and it was bad. But this one was just, it has more of a charm to it. It has more fun to it. I don't think you would have liked Double Dare more, or Double whatever it is.
Double Down
more. This was more fun, believe it or not.
Okay.
Yeah, I do want to buy this one day on Amazon if I can find it for like $1. But like,
good luck.
You know. I mean, I'm sure used and new, I could probably find it. But.
People love Neil Breen movies. They really do. That's why there are Kickstarters financing his next movie. People love him.
Well, anyway.
Let's wrap it up.
Like a mummy.
To talk about.
All right. So thank you guys.
Better than Neil Breen?
Oh, my goodness. All right. Thank you guys so much for listening tonight. If you guys liked it, share this video. Let people know. That we're talking about Neil Breen. If you guys have no idea who Neil Breen is, go look up on his Twitter.
Please
apparently
do.
He has a Twitter. And go find out. Apparently he's got a Kickstarter for his next movie. Also check out indiefilmcafe.reviews and check out sickflickproductions.com. Check us out on Indie Film Cafe on Twitter,
absolutely.
Instagram, Patreon, Facebook, everywhere. We're everywhere. Just look up Indie Film Cafe. You can find us on, what is it? What's it on SoundCloud? Spotify and what is it? Radio Public. And we're now on Radio Public. So please go on Radio Public, and then like apparently if you
you listen.
And not listen, but if you add us into your queue or whatever, we get like a couple cents.
Yay.
I mean, whatever. It helps. Anything helps, for us. We appreciate that. Also, check us out on Podbean. That's where we're at right now. iTunes, everywhere.
YouTube.
We've got a YouTube channel.
Where we'll be doing a special video on our Neil Breen's, how to Breen. So if you can do it properly.
That would be kind of funny. what's the other one I want to mention? Oh, the Christmas party.
Christmas party.
Halloween party.
Halloween party.
I always say Christmas party, but it's a Halloween party.
Well, I guess you could dress up as Santa.
You could.
Or the Easter Bunny.
You could dress up as Side Boob.
Oh my goodness. dress up like Neil Breen.
This wasn't even the worst incoherent movie we saw today. That's the worst thing.
Yeah. Just wait till our review for. Oh, we're doing a new thing on YouTube for our channel. We're doing What the Fuck Fridays. So check that out. This Friday we start it. So just get ready for some like what the fuck movie reviews.
Yeah, we kicked it off with Lust for Dracula.
Yeah. So get ready for that. But aside from that, I guess that's it. Thank you guys. Thank you guys for listening. Hope you guys enjoyed it. It was
absolutely
a little longer than we normally do.
Well, there's just so much Neil Breen, we have to share it all with everyone.
That story was long.
That's what she said.
Yeah.
Nice. Alrighty.
All right.
On that note.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Oh, my God. god, this is a 4.6 out of 10 on IMDb. It had 3.5 stars on Amazon.
People love Neil Breen.
I'm telling you.
It's a magical day.
Please stop. You can't do this. Please don't do it anymore. Are you going to stop? You can't do this anymore.